Throughout the 1980s, a strange phenomenon was sweeping North America.
They were in a panic. And like people in a panic, they want solutions.
Allegations of underground satanic cults, torturing and terrorizing children. The thing is, there were no satanic cults preying on children. And nearly 30 years later, the people touched by it all are still picking up the pieces.
This isn't a work of fiction. This is a work of history.
Satanic Panic, available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast.
The drugs that we're seeing in our communities are more dangerous and more deadly than ever before. People have transitioned from injecting drugs to inhaling drugs. The impacts are very real on communities. Illicit drugs and hard drugs should not be used where kids are playing, where patients are recovering, where community life is lived.
That's British Columbia Premier David Eby announcing that public drug use will no longer be legal in that province. The move comes 1 year into BC's pilot project to decriminalize drugs. It was a first in Canada, something that health advocates pushed for to help ease the toxic drugs crisis, which has claimed some 14,000 lives in that province in the past 8 years. But last week, the premier said police and the public safety issues raised had brought concerns around this to the forefront, and so part of that program, drug use in public, would be rolled back. Daniel Fontaine is a city councillor in New Westminster, British Columbia. Councillor, good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
You and two other councillors hired a public relations firm at your own expense and put out a press release calling for an end to what you called the failed drug decriminalization experiment. You must be delighted with what the premier has done here.
Well, I'm pleased that the premier has finally listened to city councillors like Linda Annis and myself and Alexa Liu and other mayors across British Columbia, and has listened to the fact that we've been saying for months now that the open use of illicit drugs in public places like parks, like playgrounds, and now, as we've discovered in the past few months, in places like our local hospitals and in places like Tim Hortons, it's just simply unacceptable. So while it's taken longer than I would have liked, I am pleased that there has been some movement towards recognition that this decriminalization experiment has been having terrible impacts in communities throughout British Columbia.
Can you describe, for people who may not be familiar, what has happened? How has public drug use impacted people who live in New Westminster?
Well, Matt, it pretty much almost happened overnight. Once we had the move towards decriminalization, we saw in places like New Westminster and other communities in the Metro Vancouver area and across BC, just a flagrant open use of drugs in a way that I have never seen in the time that I've lived here in British Columbia and Metro Vancouver. The fact that people felt that it was okay to consume, crystal meth, heroin, some incredible drugs that could kill people in places like Tim Hortons, it had just simply crossed the line. And part of that came with the fact that the message was, this is decriminalized. And it was incredible that you could consume these illicit drugs while at the same time, if you openly lit a cigarette, you could have an infraction. You could be arrested. It was just, it was a really failed experiment.
Was it a public safety issue? I mean, part of this is about visible drug use, but what were the public safety concerns that you saw in your community?
Well, we heard reports, after reports of, for example, in places like hospitals where nurses were speaking out about the fact that they were having to wear masks, they were being exposed to the vapors from these illicit drugs, they were getting sick. I mean, there were, obviously, if you're consuming, heroin, crystal meth, crack in a Tim Hortons, those vapors are going to be going to the booth next to you. Clearly, that's not good for people's health, and that type of activity should never ever have been permitted in the province of British Columbia, and why it took so long for us to finally recognize that and to pull that back is beyond me. But I am pleased that at least now the police have some small tool to at least address that and make sure that if there are concerns from the public, that they can be addressed in a small way.
And speaking with government officials over the course of several months on this program, we've heard that this pilot program was launched to decriminalize drugs in response to calls from many healthcare professionals, from the province's former coroner, from others who saw it as an important step in the face of unrelenting drug deaths. So people are going to use these drugs anyway, but if you get them out of the shadows, perhaps people will not die at the rates that we are seeing now. What do you think went wrong in that?
Well, let me say, I'll be very clear. I've lived here long enough. I was here when former Vancouver Mayor Philip Owen was advocating for the Four Pillars drug strategy, as well as former Mayor Larry Campbell. It's so important that if you're going to experiment in the way that we've done, we have to have a Four Pillars approach.
And
that
the four pillars, just for people who don't understand, are... Yep.
It's harm reduction, prevention, treatment, and enforcement. Mm-hmm. And it's so clear that all of those pillars need to be addressed at the same time. Matt, I think the big problem with this is that when this experiment got started, I think the public was under the assumption that the government, given this was declared a crisis and emergency 8 years ago, that a lot of additional treatment would be in place, prevention programs, enforcement, all of that would be in place prior to the experiment being undertaken. And what we saw unfold is a one-pillar approach where the main focus was on decriminalization as perhaps some sort of silver bullet to address the concerns that many had indicated around the fact that so many people are dying. And we have a record number now in British Columbia. I think almost 8 people a day are dying of drug overdose. So clearly, this experiment didn't work here. It did not work in Oregon, where they tried it for 3 years. Mm. And we needed to pull back and we need to reset. And I think we need to invest significantly in the other pillars before we ever make an attempt to do this again in a public domain.
Will recriminalizing drug use make drug users any safer?
Well, that's a good question. And I'm not sure we have really recriminalized. I mean, it's clear from the Premier's statements that essentially, nobody's going to be arrested. Things are not going to significantly change overnight. You know, people from the public have asked me, is this going to make a huge difference? I don't think so. I don't think we're going to see a large difference. The way we're going to see a difference is if the government is serious about this crisis, if they're serious about this emergency, they will open up literally thousands of new treatment beds. Mm-hmm. We're going to recruit mental health nurses, invest in supportive housing to make sure that people have the housing they need. All of those services need to be put in place like it is an emergency and like it's a crisis. If we don't do that, Matt, we're going to be seeing the same problems for months to come.
If the four pillars were in place, would you support decriminalization?
I'd be open to looking at decriminalization if the four pillars were in place and if I could see evidence that the government of British Columbia was serious about focusing on prevention, on treatment, and making sure that the proper enforcement tools are there for the police, for sure.
Just last question, and this is about politics. An election is looming. Politicians, we've heard, have received many comments, calls, etc., from constituents who are worried about decriminalization and what you described. Are you comfortable with politics and political backlash directing policy?
Well, you know, you can't disentangle politics from public policy. Unfortunately, the politicians are making public policy, so there's going to be politics involved in it. But I think we need to look at science first, look at data and evidence. That's important. And that's where I feel we've been let down in this particular experiment. Because we can look down south to Oregon, where they two years or so ahead of us, that experiment was failing miserably, and it was not getting the results that the researchers were telling us we would get. So you can't disentangle politics, but you have to make sure that your decisions are being made based on science and not on politics.
Daniel Fontaine, glad to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, Matt.
Daniel Fontaine is a city councillor in New Westminster, British Columbia. Corey Frozy is the provincial safety director for ambulance, paramedics, and emergency dispatchers of BC. He's on the line from Mission, British Columbia. Corey, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Can you describe the kind of scenarios you and your fellow paramedics have been seeing and dealing with over the past year as decriminalization has been in place in your province?
Well, I mean, we've been, as paramedics and emergency dispatchers, we've been on the front lines of this from the beginning. it's a massive problem. We have seen a steady decline in what I would see as the safety parameters, unfortunately. I mean, we actually respond to every particular area that we have the illicit drug use and where people are suffering from drug addiction. And of course, paramedics are directly kind of frontline into the involvement, what it means to a paramedic when we respond, because there's violence that sometimes ensues. There's erratic behaviors in that.
And so have you seen an increase in that violence and that erratic behavior toward your members?
I have, yeah. There has been showing some significant increases over the last few years around what it means for a paramedic to respond to these type of calls. And from a prevention end, it's my responsibility to make sure that we come up with safety parameters to make sure that paramedics can remain safe and to continue to be able to respond and support people with addiction.
Do you draw a direct line between that increase in violence and decriminalization?
I can't say for sure. I mean, obviously, I'm not there making and implementing these policies, but as paramedics, we've definitely seen an increase in the violence and in the erratic behaviors that we when we go to different areas, when it's more commonplace to see the use, it definitely is a factor in why we're seeing more and more of it.
And so the premier said that this change was in part due to protect frontline healthcare workers. What kind of difference do you think, if there's a reinstatement and a ban on public drug use, what will that mean? What sort of difference will that mean for paramedics and emergency dispatchers?
Well, you know, when I read into it, I see it as more of, it looks like we're kind of identifying some safety parameters. Because again, as I've said, paramedics, we need a safe space to be able to go and have safety parameters in which to access these type of areas where people are in having addiction issues. And with addiction issues comes a myriad of other problems and violence and different behaviors, unfortunately, is kind of commonplace in, around, and amongst these, and for varying reasons. And as paramedics, we very much sympathize and empathize with the people that have the addiction problems. We are desperately trying to find ways that we can be the most effective we can to try to save lives. Like, people sometimes don't realize how big the problem is. For every death that we've had in this province, especially as far as the contact of BC paramedics, we probably save upwards of 100 different people and revive them to get them, wow, you know, to get them support and help. And we don't look at those numbers. It's catastrophic. I've been a paramedic for 24 years. Sometimes we go to the same person again and again and again in the same day or even the same block, trying to revive. But sometimes, catastrophically, we don't get there in time.
What is that like to be there on that front line?
It is emotionally draining for paramedics. There's a huge psychological component for paramedics, because we desperately want to help. We desperately want to, everything that we do in terms of the scope of practice that we do is to save lives and to make people, to reduce the injury, to make things get better. But it's frustrating from a paramedic lens, because we don't have a lot of the control. And we understand the pain and that people do suffer from this addiction problem. But we don't have, we're there as that measure to, hopefully, you know, revive them and hopefully get there in time. But it's frustrating on our end to see it and to see what the effects that it has for the individual patients. And that's why, from paramedic lens, we would actually love to see an advancement in our community paramedic projects in the metro to help support get support units, so that we would actually have the ability to be able to go and support people in the areas where they're having problems with addiction, so we can come and have support units where we can provide different levels of support in terms of not just medical but other terms of medical support.
Are you frustrated with the failure of this project? I mean, ostensibly this pilot project was put in place to save lives, and as we've heard, counselors that we just spoke with said that all of the parts weren't there. We've talked about a lack of treatment beds, and we've heard about that on the program before. Are you frustrated with that, given what you see on those front lines?
Well, I mean, from paramedic standpoint, I mean, again, I don't make the policies, but what I see currently and what's been happening the last few years is status quo is not working. And it's hurting the individual patients that are suffering from addiction. We need a program. We need to have something that not only is in place to help the patients that have addiction, but having safety parameters around making sure that even like first responders and that can continue to be safely be able to be accessing these people to give them the support that they need. This policy, you know, whether I can say it worked or not, I mean, I know the status quo is not working. We support any measures that can make it a safer program so that we can actually get to these people and have the ability to apply those treatments safely.
Corey, good to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Corey Ferozzi is the Provincial Safety Director for Ambulance, Paramedics, and Emergency Dispatchers of British Columbia.
The next thing I know is I wake up and I just remember, like, something bad happened to me last night. Somebody hurt me.
This is Carrie Lowe's story.
Carrie did everything, quote unquote, right. She reported right away.
Her legal team says police systematically mishandled her case.
Meanwhile, her attackers remain at large.
I'm Maggie Rahr, and this is Carrie Lowe Versus. Available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Corey Ranger is the president of the Harm Reduction Nurses Association. Corey, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. A year into this pilot project, we've heard about the failures from people on the front lines, from those politicians who are dealing with reaction from the public. What is this announcement by the premier going to mean in your province, do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's extremely disappointing. And I think it would be helpful if I can just kind of clarify some of the statements that we've heard from some of the other speakers, including the counselor who was on first. The counselor said that it's, you know, legal for people now to use meth and heroin, but the state of the unregulated drug supply is that there is no heroin in BC anymore. It's not heroin anymore that people are using. It's actually fentanyl. Fentanyl that's contaminated with benzodiazepines and animal tranquilizers. And so what we're actually seeing is people are, you know, they don't have any agency of choice. They don't have any bodily autonomy in what they're able to actually procure and use. And that's causing immense amounts of harm. And so it's really difficult to have these conversations when people aren't on the same page, because the counselor then went on to say that it's, you know, incredible that someone could use heroin in a public setting, but someone isn't allowed to smoke a cigarette. But if you were to tell someone to go and smoke a cigarette in an alleyway, that's a much different situation than if you tell someone to go use unregulated fentanyl in an alleyway. One person dies from that situation and the other person doesn't. Because one drug supply, the tobacco, is regulated and the other is not. And so there's so much miscommunication and misinformation swirling around this particular issue. And the BC government's decision to recriminalize people who use drugs, particularly people who have no homes, who have no shelter, is going to lead to irreparable harm because of the dangerous nature of the unregulated drug supply. And irreparable harm means death.
One of the other things, I want to come back to that in a moment. One of the other things that the counselor mentioned, though, was what's happening, particularly in hospitals. This got a lot of attention, where nurses were saying they had to walk through plumes of fentanyl from people smoking drugs, that an island nurse was told not to breastfeed her child out of fear that the milk could be contaminated from drugs that she'd been exposed to at work, that staff were told not to remove personal items from a patient's room, even if there was a knife in a bag, that the RCMP couldn't go through people's bags, etc. Is that acceptable, do you think?
No, not in my viewpoint. And I think that that is some of the important nuance in this conversation that we need to have, because we too at the Harm Reduction Nurses Association don't want people to be exposed to plumes of smoke. We don't want people to be concerned about their safety in the workplace. But the important differentiation is that there's multiple options in order to address it.
I guess just in the face of that, do you have to figure out some sort of restrictions to rein some of that behavior in? That's my question.
You can actually add supports, and you could create safer use spaces. You could address the unregulated drug poisoning emergency by targeting the unregulated drug supply so that people have safe supply options that don't result in them smoking in hospital rooms. You could have safer spaces for people to go to. You can actually balance the needs, the safety needs of staff, and help keep people alive at the same time without regressing on policy that's going to cause such significant harm to people who are already at the greatest risk of death.
What do you do about that then? Because in the absence of those steps, I mean, again, the counselor talked about these four pillars, and the absence of those pillars being put into place, what the reason that politicians like the counselor and the premier are acting is because they're hearing from the public who say that what they're hearing and what they're seeing is not acceptable. So what's the first step to addressing that? If you're concerned about, you know, this step being leading to more death from drug users, and that's part why the step was put into place in the first place. What do you do first to try to address this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think when we're looking at this situation and people are feeling very distressed about public drug use and they're feeling concerned about public safety, it's important to clarify that also in BC, homelessness has increased significantly over the last 2 years. The drug supply has worsened significantly over the last 2 years or since the beginning of the pandemic. And so we could actually address those root causes, and applying more enforcement and criminalization to people, which is something we've done for 100 plus years in Canada, has not been shown to actually decrease public drug consumption. And it's not something that has been shown to actually increase public safety. What that's going to result in is more people using alone in alleyways and parkades and dying in those isolated locations, which people don't want either. And so we could actually target the housing crisis, the affordability crisis, the mental health crisis, the unregulated drug poisoning crises, these colliding wicked problems that we have in BC. But instead, we're looking at this in a very short-sighted way, and we're saying people have concerns, so let's just apply more policing to it. But that's not been an effective strategy for a very long time, and so it's concerning that that's what we're resorting back to.
What would you say to people who were calling those politicians, who were raising alarms around public safety, who were outraged with the idea at its basic element of a decriminalization? What would you say to them in BC?
I would ask them to examine these problems in a bit more of an in-depth lens, and I would ask them to keep calling their politicians and to keep raising these concerns, but to shift their viewpoint to a strengths-based way and say, we need more housing. We have a housing crisis in British Columbia. You're seeing in Greater Vancouver in the last year, a 32% increase in homelessness. And if we're going to tell people that they can't use their drugs in public places, they need places to go to then. Otherwise, they're going to go back to using in public washrooms, and they're going to go back to using in places where they're still going to experience harm, but nobody's going to find them. And then that means that they're going to die. So, you know, keep calling your politician and keep telling them that that we need to address this issue by scaling up safer use spaces in our community, by addressing the lack of available housing in our communities, by bolstering the supports like what the paramedic Corey was talking about before. We can actually do all of these things. We can balance the needs, the safety needs of healthcare workers, of the public, and we can help keep people alive.
Do you think the idea of decriminalization is now dead? This was a big gamble as a pilot project by the provincial government. And a year into this has had to roll it back because of public concern. There is federal issues being raised with the leader of the Federal Conservative Party, who has been talking about this. In Ontario, the idea of decriminalization in the city of Toronto is being pushed back on by the premier in that province. Is that concept of decriminalization dead, do you think, in light of what's happened in BC?
I really hope it's not. I hope.
But do you think it is?
At this point in time, if we're taking steps back to recriminalize people who have no homes, then the concept of it is no longer there. Yeah. So, but I hope that cooler heads will prevail, because we don't need to step back. We could actually do more. And these failings that we're seeing are a result of incrementalism. This is a poorly implemented pilot model that was not implemented in a way that is actually going to address the unregulated drug supply, right? You said on your show already that decriminalization was intended to help keep people from dying, but they're still accessing a poison drug supply that's contaminated with all sorts of unwanted additives that are causing huge problems like prolonged sedation and amnesia and, of course, overdose. And so if you don't actually implement it properly, you're going to see these faults and these failings. And then, of course, when elections start to loom, people are going to politicize this. And when folks get concerned and they want to get elected again, they're going to regress. And that's really unfortunate, because that's not the way forward. And that's not how we're actually going to resolve this crisis.
Corey, we'll leave it there. Good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Corey Ranger is president of Harm Reduction Nurses Association. We did invite British Columbia's Health Minister, Adrian Dix, to speak with us today, but he declined.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.